tuned to WRLR 98.3 FM, Round Lake Beach, Illinois. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Coronavirus 19 and its impact on Lake County show. My name's Norm Marion, and my co-host is Don Johnson. Don, good afternoon. Hey,
good afternoon, Norm. Good to see you, man.
You too. Sunny skies, variable cloudiness later on. It's going to have humid temperatures all day long with a beautiful sky outside right now, though, but it's supposed to be cloudy in and then maybe a thunderstorm this afternoon or tonight.
It has been a little stuffy the last couple of nights.
Yeah.
Might have even needed the air conditioner on.
High of 85 today, cooler near the lake. Right now, 79 right here. And lots of things going on today for the show. We got a very special guest coming up in just a few moments, but we wanted to play something first about him, right?
Yeah, well, we got Bill Dickens coming on with us, who is a world-class bass player. We had him on the other day when Hecky Powell passed away. We'll talk a little bit about that. But now we're going to talk about his exploits as a musician and where that came from. But first, we're going to hear from Stanley Clark talking about the contributions of Bill Dickens' technique on the bass. And I find it's pretty fascinating.
Bill Dickens. Bill the Buddha Dickens. Wow. It's one of my favorite bass players. I think I first saw Bill, it was many years ago, I'm not sure what decade it was in, but he was playing with Ramsey Lewis, and I really enjoyed him that night, and I was wondering, who is this guy here? You know, Bill is one of those players that has distinguished himself by, I would just have to say, not being afraid of being himself. You know, there's a real impressive list of bass players that are individuals that have sort of stepped outside of the norm and done things that weren't normal or standard or in someone else's comfort zone. And Bill's one of those guys. I mean, I for a long time, Bill's, when it came to playing slap bass, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, Bill was one of my favorite. He was like one of the first guys when that slap phenomena came around, thanks to Larry Graham. He was the first to actually, you know, really, really take it far. I mean, you know, I did some things. I had a very different way. I was able to put it into jazz and other forms of music. But Bill actually took the technique itself and actually expanded upon it and made it really, like, interesting and some really different sort of things. And I really appreciated that. I've always been a fan of bass players. Anyone that has listened to my records or been to my tours have seen me with, you know, other bass players on the stage. I think that's the composer inside me. As a composer, you write for lots of people, and you want to write for the best people, and some of those people happen to be bass players other than me, you know. So, and Bill, I'd like to end this by saying I hope one day we get a chance to play, because I don't think we ever played together, and, you know, come on. Anyway, congratulations on all your achievements and all your future achievements as well. And this is Stanley Clark. Thank you.
Nice accolade to hear from Stanley Clark, another fine bass player, talking about the technique and contributions of one Billy the Buddha Dickens, who was joining us here today on our COVID-19 presentation. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing well, Don. How are you guys doing?
Hey, good afternoon, Bill, and welcome to the show. This is WRLR 98.3 FM, and, you know, Stanley Clark talking about your slapping that bass playing like there's no tomorrow. And what a great, great compliment. That must have made you feel great.
It did. And, you know, along with him and many others that I didn't know, you know, really knew much about me, but to my surprise, they had been listening to me all along, and I had no clue. So I'm very, very grateful. Very, very grateful.
As he mentioned, Bill, a lot of your history began most notably. Let's talk about when your career really took off with Ramsey Lewis. You became very visible in the industry, and you started to develop your technique. Talk about what that was like being with Ramsey Lewis and how that helped expose you to some of the, you know, the top programs, the top players out there in the jazz world?
It was a huge thing. It was kind of surprising for me because, you know, again, it's like I don't keep up with all of the things that I've done because it's just too much, you know, and I have to sit down one day and and have to compile the stuff. But you can imagine that, you know, for one, getting the audition for Ramsey through Frank Donaldson was really a surprise. And I had met Ramsey actually at an Earth, Wind & Fire concert without knowing that I was going to actually be his bass player, and which was really interesting. So when I got the gig, one of the things that I noticed about Ramsey is Ramsey always pushes you like beyond what you're used to. He kept me always in a very uncomfortable position of striving to be better than what I am, you know. By one of the things he did was would leave me on the stage by myself, and he says, "Play." And I'm like, "Play what? Just play." And you buy yourself, the spotlight's on you, and you have to automatically come up with something not only that's interesting, but something that's entertaining to the people as well.
Right.
So, you know, that taught me a lot and crafted me and set me up to be a recording artist on my own, you know. So, but the people I've been around and played with, I mean, and everybody I can go by, like Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Stanley Turrentine, Freddie Hubbard, Johnny Mathis, and a host of many, many, many other people.
Nancy Wilson too, right?
Nancy Wilson, Grover Washington, Maurice White. I played with him, and I wrote with Maurice White for Earth, Wind & Fire.
So let's talk about that moment when you went and auditioned with Ramsey in the basement. Take us through that step by step.
Absolutely. Well, the thing that happened is after I got the gig, one of the first things Ramsey asked me was, could I write? And I said, yeah, because I had been writing since I was 16 years old. I got my first writer's deal through a radio personality guy named Lucky Cordell, who had a production company. And he heard one of my tunes, actually, and I don't know if I ever told you this, Don, but I actually wrote this song called Just Friends. It was my first single at 16 years old. And I wrote it in the music building at Northwestern.
Of all places.
Yeah. Battles and stuff. So I had this guy named Kyle Boyington who...
Oh, yeah. He was a singer and a performer.
He was the other Peeble Bryson. Yeah. He was a phenomenon. So he had did my demo. And it was just me on piano and him singing, you know, my lyrics. And you think for like a little 16-year-old, you know... Well, was I making any sense? I'm not sure if I was, but when they heard the song, they said it was a smash hit and scared me to death. Next thing I know, I'm in the studio with half of the musicians from Curtain and some of the Chicago Symphony. I'm sitting there as a 16-year-old watching my song morph into something that I would never expect it to be.
And for those that don't remember, Curtain was a label that had Curtis Mayfield, as I recollect. And
yeah, the Superfly movie, many artists came from that label,
yep.
And one of the biggest, probably most successful labels to come out of Chicago.
Hey, Bill, not to make any fun of your age or anything here, but how long have you been playing the bass for the people here in Lake County and in Northern Illinois and throughout the world?
You know, I started professionally at 13. And I did my first record at Paul Serrano's studio, which was off of 18th Street, right across the street from McCormick Place.
Okay.
And I did my first record with the Gene Johnson Singers, and I'd never been in a recording studio in my entire life. And so when I recorded the song, I got the song right on the first take. And I was very nervous. And so the producer said, you don't have to do anything else. You did it on the first take. I said, I did? He said, yeah, didn't. I said, what's the punch in?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, so since I was 13, I started, recording and then playing professionally. I started playing actually on the club circuit at the time, and also working with some of the biggest gospel artists around, like Reverend Milton Bronson.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
The Thompson Community Singers. Mm-hmm. Was on shows with Ranch Allen, Andre Crouch. I didn't know who these people were.
Pastor T.L. Barrett, I remember. He was a big-time pastor during that time period with a great following on, I believe it was WGRT at the time. That was the record. That was the radio station that was popular.
Oh, wow.
That's right. So, you know, at that time, I didn't know any of those artists. But, you know, again, like later, I found out these were some of the biggest artists in the world in gospel music. So I was exposed to the whole music scene at a very, very young age, probably younger than most people, except like a Michael Jackson or something like that.
Talk about where your style came from. We heard Stanley alluding to it. I happen to know you. You play with tremendous speed and accuracy, and talk about how that style evolved. Is we were chatting earlier. Sometimes you're like Miles Davis. You say you got to practice a long time before you can play like yourself. Before you find your style, you have to go through these phases, and you have to work long enough before that style emerges. Talk about that.
Well, Don, you know what's funny, and it's really interesting, is that I was into sports. I love football.
I remember.
and a lot of that stuff, it made its way over to my playing, because I was like so disciplined, and I've always been sort of like this one dimension focused kind of person. I never was a multitasker,
Yes.
One at a time. So I took a lot of the things I learned in football in terms of building my strength up, and applied it to my instrument. And that's why I became so fast and so accurate, because of the things that I learned through sports. I just applied it to my instrument. And that's really the gist of it. I mean, I went through a transformation probably when I was 18 years old. And when people saw me, like Daryl Jones and others, they had never seen nothing like that in their life.
Now, you mentioned Daryl Jones, who's now the current bass player for the Rolling Stones, but there was a community of bass players. Let's give people some context and perspective. There was a community of bass players that you kind of came up with. You all were, I don't know if it's fair to say competing, but you were certainly in the same range. And I'm going to go down the list of names here, because I know you just recently did something with a group of the top bass players out of Chicago on Chicago Jazz Magazine. Richard Patterson, Daryl Jones, who we just mentioned, Larry Kempel. Daryl Jones played, by the way, with Miles Davis first, and then the Rolling Stones. And then Larry Kempel played with Frankie Beverly and Mays and George Duke. And then Mike Manson, another bass player that I think he's playing with George Duke now. And then Chuck Webb, of course. And go ahead.
No, go ahead, please. I'm listening.
Yeah, and so I was just mentioning the bass players. I'm sure there's some that I forgot, but I know some homegrown bass players from Evanston. Steve Jennings had an influence on your style. Talk about your development of that style, and then when you started to realize, your own sense of Bill the Buddha Dickens.
Well, the thing is that Steve was always a mentor, a teacher. He was a hero. He's the person I looked up to, when I was a little kid, about 7-8 years old. I was actually started out almost at the same time as a drummer and a bass player. So I was playing drums in a couple of bands with Steve, and Steve was a genius. That is the best way to put it. I've never seen in my life witnessed a person that could listen to a record and hear every nuance of what the bass is playing. Even if it was a mistake, Steve would play it. I've never seen nothing like that since.
No, I remember hanging out with you guys, because I wasn't a musician like you guys were, but I was in the basement a lot of times listening to you practice, Richard Reed, guys like Frank. I would hear you guys playing, and never realizing that, you know, I was sitting amongst a group of players that were going to go on and become professionals, you know. But I remember sitting in the basement listening to you guys, you know, play your version of Chaka Khan, play your version of Larry Graham, et cetera.
That's right. And the thing about it, you know, in Evanston at that time, I could go to somebody's house and I would know exactly what house it would be, and the band would be practicing, but I was too young to, you know, to actually walk in, and also actually very shy as well. So I would just listen, you know, by the basement window and listen to these guys practicing and take some of that stuff, go back home and try to copy it, you know? But Steve Jennings was the guy that really changed my life as a bass player. He turned me onto a special kind of slapping technique. And once I got it, I disappeared for about a year and a half. And when I came back out on the scene, I was doing all this stuff, not realizing that I had created something that had never even been heard before. But I didn't know. You know, I just thought, oh, I got all this great speed. I'm doing all of this stuff. And lo and behold, that's why I got the name the Buddha from Victor and his brothers.
We're with Bill the Buddha Jenkins here on Dickens on WRLR's COVID-19 and its impact to Lake County. And Bill, okay, so you were gone a year and a half, maybe practicing more than playing with other people, and then you came back. Various clubs in Chicago, like the Green Mill, you had the Dolphin Room. Obviously, there's Buddy Guy's Legends, where a lot of jazz people get to play. Were those some of your favorites? And can you name a few places? And how did that reaction from the fans turn you on?
You know, it was, you know, the thing about it is, for me, it was always like, you know, I had been playing all these great clubs since, like I said, again, it started at 13.
Right.
So I went through the 70s playing in clubs and in Chicago on through until I, you know, of course, I got with Ramsey Lewis.
Yeah, I know it was the Jazz Bulls, the Back Room.
Bulls, the Back Room.
George's.
You know, Ritz. Forget the name, but the club over there on Lakeshore Drive.
Ritz Cafe American, which I'm glad you brought that up, because I want you to tell that story, because we were talking about this morning. I went to see Bill play, right? He was playing with Ramsey Lewis, and my dad's a big jazz fan, so okay. I'm like, yeah, let's go catch Bill from Evanston. Okay. So we go, and we're sitting in the front. Bill has us hooked up. We're sitting in the front seat. He plays his set. He comes over to the table. And Bill sits down, talks to us, because we're Evanstonians, right?
Sure.
And over comes Khalilah Ali, Muhammad Ali's wife.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, and the funny thing about it, man, I mean, the other side of it, too, is that I was around a lot of my heroes. I spent the whole day in Vegas when I played the Lou Ross Telethon TV show, and we played my song, Bernice. I spent most of the day with Mike Tyson and Nell Carter.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. So, you know, and it was one-on-one. There was no security. There was no, you know, bodyguards. It's just me, Mike and myself. And then later on, Nell jumped into conversation. And, you know, Mike was there to hear the music. And, you know, the same thing when I met Magic Johnson and Julius Erving, you know,
the doctor.
One conversation, you know, and they were there to hear the music, you know.
Ramsey Lewis had a certain esteem with some of the older crowd and the in crowd, if you want to call it that.
Definitely the in crowd.
And you went along for that ride. I know that Ramsey always had that feel of something classical, something, you know, high self esteem. Everything was highbrow, so when he came, he always presented himself in that way. A lot of times I think you guys would wear jackets and tuxedos. It was that kind of scene. Talk about that influence on you.
Yeah, well, it definitely cleaned me up.
No.
We were from that, you know, I didn't come from that era. I
mean, you came from the funk and R&B, because I was in the basement listening to it.
Wearing all kinds of stuff that stood out, way out, you know what I mean?
Yes,
sure. So
Ramsey had to tame that down, and he said, look, son, we're going to have to change your dress. We're going to have to change your image, everything. I mean, really, it was like 8 years of just grooming me. you know, it changed me because I had never been around the upper echelon of people, just as an audience, never in my life. You know, it's always been kind of like the R&B, funk, or gospel kind of stuff.
A little grittier, yeah.
Hey, Bill.
Go ahead.
Hey, Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt, but now that COVID-19 has taken away two of the biggest festivals that we have every summer in Chicago, Blues Fest and, of course, Gospel Fest, can you give us a little impressions? Obviously, you've been out at those things for many years and have seen many fans. And give us your opinion now that you've had to stay at home since and can't perform at this time.
Yeah, well, you know what the funny thing is? I just did this interview yesterday with Victor Wooten from Bela Flecktones, Aaron Cameo, also Dublin Bush from Living Color, and the bass player from Guns N' Roses. It was, you know, a bunch of us that were talking about that. And the thing is, I tell you what is really different for us as musicians, we're able to communicate more so than we ever have in our careers.
You can actually slow down for a moment.
Yeah, we're always busy, but now, you know, with the, you know, technology is Zoom, we're all together talking and having a great time, really, talking about the virus and what is how it's affected us. A lot of the major artists that had tours set up or lined up for the summer, all that stuff has either been pushed back or canceled altogether. So nobody was prepared for this. But what it did, it really brought the communication between musicians together in a way that I haven't seen since high school, you know, before internet, you know. I'm able to contact people. I've been doing work in production. I got a single out with Prince's Cousin right now. I'm getting a lot of things done, which is kind of strange. You would think that I would be like unemployed and out of work, and it's really almost the opposite. It's wow. Kind of hard to find, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, COVID-19 affected you recently with Hecky Powell, very close to you, somebody that was near and dear to you and recognized you as a musician in Evanston by having a tribute and building an artwork, a statue there that was put in the Evanston community to commemorate your success as an Evanstonian and a bass player. Talk about what your relationship was with Hecky Powell, the entrepreneur, what he meant to you.
He meant the world to me. I mean, he was a trailblazer. You know, a lot of us have never seen nothing like that. I mean, I've seen other entrepreneurs before Hecky, but Hecky seemed to have this facade about himself. He was like a magnet, man. You know, people just draw to him. Just even if it was just his presence, you know, you just felt this guy that has so much energy and confidence, but at the same time, he treated you like a real human being, you know?
Yeah, I knew that he had that restaurant since 1983 there. It was a really one of the iconic places and became one of the iconic barbecue places in Evanston at Green Bay Road and Emerson. And I know he was connected with Northwestern University, but he was a real supporter of Bill Dickens. I happen to know that, and we worked on a video project where I know that he catered the food for the show, and in fact his name appears in the credits when we did your day at the beach, and we did your body of work in the video,
right? And as well as the award show, you know, winning the biggest award of 2019, he was a part of that as well, as you know. And Hecky has always not only been a big supporter, but a big inspiration to me, because we both have a lot of similarities. You know, we kind of came up against the grain. You know, people saying you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't go no further than this. And Hecky basically said, "I'm not listening to you. I'm going to do just the opposite, and I'm going to be successful." And that's what he did.
I always heard his name in the political circles early on, because my mom worked as a civil service commissioner in Evanston, and Hecky was the executive director of Neighbors at Work, which was really like a social agency that reached out to young people in Evanston. And Ed Heckey was a big part of that. So I can see the foundation was being set then. He was building relationships with young people, setting up scholarships, setting up ways for them to improve themselves as individuals.
Absolutely. And you know, for him to do something on that level was like I said again, was something that you know, was unheard of coming out of Evanston. Evanston had a very low ceiling for I would say opportunity. That's, you know, it's a great place to basically groom yourself and to get yourself together, but you have to go abroad. But Heckey was one of those people that stayed there, and he made a dent that will never be replaced, you know, in Evanston politically, as well as, you know, with his restaurant. And, you know, I just seen him grow to a point that it was just like, it was phenomenal. And I was very proud of him. And I was proud of somebody like that being in Evanston, that got to that kind of level that he was able to really reach out to not only to young people, but just the general public of Evanston as a whole. It was just incredible, man.
We can tell how much the community is going to be missing Heckey Powell. Hey, Bill, you were doing something last night, and it also had to do with COVID-19. How was the virtual party, and how did it turn out?
It turned out phenomenal.
Great. Tell us a little about it.
Well, it was a virtual party for Lil Asher, who's an up-and-coming little 13-year-old bass player, reminds me a lot of myself. And him and his father put this whole thing together, and he got all these different people.
Name some of the big names that were in that lineup.
Birding White, Earth, Wind & Fire, Robert Bell from Kool & the Gang. Like I said, we had the bass player from Guns N' Roses. We had Victor Wooten from Baylor Fleck and Flecktones. We had Doug Winbush from The Living Color. You know, Bootsy was a
Bootsy
part
Collins.
Of
Bootsy Collins. Wow, awesome!
Yeah,
all the name is Bootsy, baby.
Yeah, a bunch of people that were a part of that. But the thing about it was really a great conversation to hear everybody talk about the change that has happened during this virus. And it's really, the thing is that we're at the top of the list of the no-nos as far as, like, okay, no festivals, no clubs or nothing like that. You know, musicians got hit the hardest because we depend on our audiences, you know.
And that summer money is all across the nation. I mean, it's not just here. It's everywhere for you guys.
It's the entire globe.
Yeah.
You know? But what has happened, like I said again, is people are communicating more with each other because we're available now to talk. We're available to work on projects and things together by way, you know, of the internet. And yeah, it's a wonderful thing. So, you know, one of the things we were talking about last night is that we want to keep this going after this is over with, because, you know, it brings some serious power to the industry to see that people are working together and not depending on the industry. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not depending on booking agencies, not depending on record companies, but coming together as a whole, as musicians, to create our own alliance,
The technology, it lends itself to that, and I think COVID forced everybody to take another look at it. We know in the court systems, they're going to adopt some things that they've done in COVID. We saw with the NFL football draft, it went a lot better.
And the baseball draft is supposed to do it a little bit later. And many other things, obviously businesses and working conditions every day with people working from home. Everybody's using the technology to be able to see and talk with each other and how they have to go about their day.
100% right. And that makes a... It changes things because, again, it's like, you know, when we didn't have that, we didn't have that kind of communication amongst each other as much.
No downtime.
Yeah.
You're playing gigs or you're in the studio, you know.
That's right, man. I remember being on the same stage as Pearl Jam a few years back with Bernie Worrell and Leo Nocitelli playing for a million people all in one setting. you know?
Man, that's awesome.
Let's talk about some other your seminal moments. And I have to reflect, because you've told me the stories. I know with Ramsey Lewis, you did an album called Chance Encounter, and you had a tremendous bass solo that that music was featured on General Hospital. And this was at the age of 22. Talk about the feeling of having your music showcased on General Hospital.
We're going back to the Ice Princess days, right, Bill?
That was a freak out for me. You know, I love a fan of General Hospital. It was happening, you know, the record was out. I Can't Wait. The other thing about it, too, for me, that was a claim fame for me is that I was one of the five bass players of all time to have a bass solo on an R&B record.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's global, you know, and that's part of history. But when that song came on General Hospital, you know, you're watching, I think it was a guy's name was Luke, and he had his to-be wife.
Yeah, Luke and Laura.
Yeah, right, Laura. And talking in this setting where it was all these people, right? And like it was so weird because they were talking, I could hear this music in the back, and they brought it up, and all of a sudden you saw everybody in that room dancing to this song. and they played almost the whole thing.
What a great moment for you. And I know there was another moment that was super, you know, for you.
Yeah, and to hear my song, you know, and to hear that song played on R&B radio, not jazz radio, but R&B radio, and hear the DJs talk about, man, that bass player, man, he's killing. He was awesome. And I'm like, I'm just this little kid, like, what?
They recognize the funk when they hear it, right?
Oh, man.
I know you brought that to the Arsenio Hall show. I know that was like one of the most viewed shows of all time when the Ramsey Lewis Trio played on there, and you were playing bass, and you had another tremendous solo that, you know, some of your colleagues talked about that were actually kids. Victor Wooten was a kid watching it with his brothers, and, and he said, Bill Dickens, I watched this solo, I watched this bass solo. I was like, who is this guy?
That's right, and just, you know, the funniest that you say that. Arsenio Hall would love bass players. And so when I got that solo on that show, you know, he came over and complimented me. But little did I know, he had a plan beyond it, beyond what I did. So that show, that particular show, aired about 8 or 9 times.
Wow.
And it hit, from what I know, I think the numbers are much higher, but about 9 to 10 million people saw that show. So, again, it was one of those situations that, you know, you're being put in as an individual, the right place, right time, right opportunity. And it that kind of like put me on the map in a way. And then I did Live from L.A., which was one of the biggest shows after that, you know, in the 90s. And that was even a bigger audience. I was the first artist to be on that show with Tupac's people and Lil Richard. I'm trying to think of the DJ from GCI. Kelly G was on that show.
Tom Joyner, maybe?
No, Kelly G was on that
show. Oh, Kelly G, okay.
Yeah, GCI. And, you know, I was on there. I was, like, playing bass solos for the commercials. That's what the commercials were before we went to the commercial, was me playing solos. And they, you know, they had me play for the audience by myself. I mean, it really exposed me in a way that, you know, I really started to see that I was an individual artist rather than just a sideman.
So we talk about being an individual artist. I know you took on the project of doing The Truth, Bill the Buddha Dickens The Truth album. And I know we got a chance to put together an interesting video. One of my favorite tunes on the album is "Day at the Beach." That's my favorite because you play this melodic fashion on a 7-string Conklin bass, but you make it sound like a guitar and a bass.
That's right. You know, because the thing about it is that one of my teachers, when I was like 18 years old, was Wes Montgomery's brother, and I was playing with Gene Harris, the famous Gene Harris, piano player at that time, was on Blue Note Records. So I kind of was exposed to the playing different instruments from a young age, but I really never thought of myself as sort of like one-dimensional. I always think like, okay, here I'm playing seven-string bass, but I had a reason behind it because I could play piano, you know? And yeah. I could see the extension of the keys.
Yeah. You know, the Dizzy Gillespie used to always talk about that, about how you got to learn how to play piano first so you can think on that scale, even though you're playing trumpet. He used to talk about that all the time.
Oh, no, and they got the footage. I mean, Miles Davis said piano and pick out parts. Because Dizzy Gillespie told them, because, you know, he asked Dizzy, well, how do you play like that? How do you hear that stuff? He said, you have to play piano so you can see the scope of what is being played, what you play against. If you don't know the chords that you're playing against, then you don't know what you're just out there in left field. And that's the real, the truth. And that's how Miles did it. That's how I did it, you know, playing other instruments and also, singing, you know, that helped, you know, because a lot of times I would sing a melody before I played on any instrument. And that way you can remember the melody better than you just sitting at your instrument and playing it. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot easier that way.
Well, I got to say, COVID-19 and its impact here has got us to have you on the air, Bill. And we really appreciate you for today's interview. And I'm really glad I got to meet you. Thank you very much. This has been Bill Dickens with us here on WRLR. And Don, if you want to say goodbyes, and then we can play something for our listeners.
Yeah, Bill, it's been exciting, and you know, we wish you the best of luck. Tell us what's coming up next for you while this COVID's coming on, and then we'll hear some music from you to close it out.
Well, I have another interview tonight for YouTube, which is going to be a worldwide interview with Sean Wallace, who was a sax player on my record. Also, he was a sax player for with Whitten and Bradford Marcellus. And the other thing is there's a new movie coming out called I'm Your Keeper that I'm the co-star of with myself and my pastor, Daryl D. Griffin, and Maui Music, and Jonathan McReynolds, both Grammy nominees, along with myself. That will be out. It should be out in early June.
All right, so, Bill. Well, we thank you for coming by and chatting with us.
Thanks, Bill.
And we're going to finish things off with music from Bill Dickens. It's called A Day at the Beach. Take care, Bill. We'll see you soon. Dickens.
Bill Dickens, right here on WRLR. We're going to have more with our legal worker, executive producer Lou Bruno, coming up in just a few moments here on WRLR. You're listening to the voice of Lake County, WRLR 98.3 FM, Round Lake Beach, Illinois. You're with Don Johnson, Norm Marion, and enjoying just a beautiful day. And COVID-19 has had its bad moments and a lot of turmoil for a lot of families. But it has given musicians a time off, Don, and we've been able to get a couple and share them with our listeners here in Lake County.
I guess if there's a silver lining in the COVID-19, it's all made us reassess where we are as people. And also it's made us imaginative. It made us kind of go back and go, you know, all these days are important with our families and people that we know while we have them. And so I think people are... got that out of the COVID-19. We can talk about the bad stuff, but some of the good stuff was communication, being around people you hadn't been around. You know, kids with their parents, seeing parents that they had engaged with.
Right, and they were able to, you know, connect and reconnect with their families. And one of our own in our own WRLR family is Lou Bruno. Lou, good afternoon to you right here on WRLR.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to be talking with you as always.
I know that Lake County has put out a certain memo with the 19th Judicial Circuit Court, and their big logo says, "Got court? No worries." Hey, what's going on?
Well, during the shutdown, we as the practicing attorneys, the judges, the court, have been participating in some manners via Zoom conferencing. That has included bond hearings. That has included pretrial conferences, at least from my experience. Maybe some people have done a little bit more than that. I don't know whether they've argued contested motions.
Okay.
But it was announced just yesterday that the court, as of June 1, as they say, will be offering. Now, that's... I think there may be a real note that they're offering remote hearings through the use of Zoom. Now, I think, you know, prior to March 15th of this year, Zoom wasn't too well known to the public, but it burst upon the scene and has become a source of people doing business, socializing, since the quarantines and shutdowns and social distancing. So the court is expanding it. Now, I was, you know, talking with the evening team last night.
Okay, that's, ladies and gentlemen, Rusty Silber and Ron Curtis Grace.
Mr. Ron Curtis Grace.
Okay, Mr. Ron Curtis Grace.
Distinguished
gentleman. I already put in his middle name. Come on.
Oh, okay. A true gentleman and scholar.
Without question.
There's an additional component to what we discussed last night, and that is each courtroom will have its own YouTube channel. Now, that just sort of blows me away as an attorney, in that you can go to YouTube, and if you want to see what's in, say, room C-403, now, room C-403 is in the main courthouse building, for instance, in Waukegan.
Right.
18 North County Street. And the C-403 is usually a courtroom that has a large amount of misdemeanor traffic cases assigned to it. And therefore, it's pretty high volume. A number of the villages will prosecute there on a given day of 10, 20 cases from some villages. Then you'll have, you know, the state's attorney with some cases. So you'll get a large crew in there, because you'll have defense attorneys, you'll have the prosecutors, you'll have the court staff, you'll have officers, you'll have the defendants. Witnesses are supposed to show up if a case is set for a trial or hearing.
Okay.
Now, It appears in that we're not talking about trials at this point, but you will receive a notice Apparently that's going to be in the mail, and it will tell you of your assigned court date, and it will give you the password to how to join it. Now, if you go to the 19th Judicial Circuit of Lake County, Illinois website, I will have to admit it is easy to find the links.
Okay.
On the explanations as to how to, you know, log on. Now, once you're logged on, then you're placed in a waiting room, which I think also people are beginning to be familiar with if you've taken part in Zoom meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to the main page, it will say right on it, remote court hearing Zoom.
Wow.
And so people may want to familiarize themselves with that. And there is a link for Zoom instructions and also to watch the YouTube feed. What's amazing is that every courtroom in the county, including the, there is not, the YouTube channels are not available right now from the branch courts.
Okay.
Mundelein, Round Lake Beach, just down the street from our studios.
Yeah, right.
And Park City.
But they are available from North County Street in Waukegan.
Yeah.
Okay.
From both of the buildings. You can go to the YouTube channel because I think, as a lot of you know, often people come with the litigant, whether it's a civil case or a criminal case, with them, and they can't enter in to the Zoom conference, but can view it on YouTube. And go ahead. I probably should open myself up for questions at this point.
According to Casey Morgan, who got out the information to everybody on the website for Lake County, and we appreciate her for doing that as well, you can have a tablet, smartphone, desktop, laptop, and you can download the free Zoom application. And then once you go to the 19th Judicial Circuit's webpage, it tells you to click a tab, and boom, then you're on your way. It seems very easy.
Yeah. It seems that way. Well, I was discussing with another attorney what's the problems here? Now, one of the things, if you've been into any of, for instance, of the criminal courtrooms or the traffic courtrooms, you may know that you'll see the attorney. You'll hire an attorney because you were charged with speeding or an accident case, whatever, and they will always tell you, I'll talk to the prosecutor.
Okay.
Now, we don't talk to the prosecutor in front of the judge as to what is, you know, being discussed as a settlement. Because as I think everyone knows, most of the cases are agreed settlements of one sort or another.
Right.
Now, that is not in front of the judge, and there's a reason for that, because the judge shouldn't hear any of the facts of the case until there's a trial. So I don't know yet how we're going to resolve that, other than you may find that they make an announcement when you step up. All right, everybody that's charged with speeding, if you want to pay $25 fine and costs, and go to traffic school, and this matter won't be on your record.
Okay.
So I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. Now, in the more serious cases, you usually have some type of communication with the prosecutor beforehand. So that may work a little bit more effectively, and so that the attorneys will be, you know, working outside of the courtroom, but be anticipated that these proceedings would take a little bit longer. And
so the people, when they go to court, Lou, then they should be prepared to be a little bit more patient and get the kinks worked out of this. Obviously, not get upset because they had a time of, say, 8:30, and they're not might not get on until about 9:15. And that's kind of normal in some cases anyway, but maybe carry on to 9:30, quarter to 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, not to mention how many people get, you know, what's the volume of the traffic at that particular time that can hold things up on the internet.
Yeah, because we're going to have a lot of traffic coming in right now with no court being in session. Right, Lou?
Right. Now, I could only assume that they really rationed out, and for a lot of the cases that have been existing on the call through the end of the week, those have been assigned other dates because the courts are closed. Now, we have matters, when I say we, our firm, have matters that are on call for next week, and we're expecting to get links to appear via Zoom. Now, in civil matters, for instance, a divorce case or say an eviction or a small claims case, contract case, the clients do not necessarily have to be there short of a trial. And the attorneys can just go on, and whether the judges will do that via a private Zoom number, they certainly could on that, or whether they'll do it on the bench. It is set up in some instances to get it done for the bench, especially all the divorce rooms.
Okay.
And the major law cases on what's the third floor over at the courthouse. The first floor, for those that aren't familiar, handles a lot of the domestic relations cases. Okay. Domestic relations / equals divorce, although there's technically some other matters there.
Will there be extra people there than in the courthouse, maybe to set the people aside on which way to go and maybe what rooms to go into, plus obviously sanitizer and such to...
You're not going into a room. You're not appearing.
Oh, so you're just watching it on YouTube.
Yeah, I was telling Rusty last night that, you know, if he's got his court date, he still has to dress for it.
Okay. Dress for television. Dress for success.
You have to dress for your Zoom conference. Although they've relaxed a dress code, so to speak. Attorneys that were expected to wear a jacket and tie don't have to wear a jacket and tie. It wasn't required for litigants.
But basically,
anyway,
it's keeping everybody out of the building, and thus everybody's social distant and safe during this time as we enter phase 3 into 5.
Yeah. Now, let me say this. This is the Lake County system. One other thing, which if you simply don't have a phone, don't have a tablet, don't have a PC, don't have a laptop, I think Ron was asking, hey, can I do it on my, you know, Fire tablet or reader? They're pretty capable of it. It has a Zoom app.
Yeah.
You can get it done. Well, let's just say you don't have any of it. There will be terminals set up, they say, in the library. They being the circuit court's procedures. Now, again, in discussions with another
attorney. All the libraries, Salou, or just the one in Waukegan, or?
Just, well, there's only one county law library, and that is in the courthouse on the first floor.
Okay.
In Waukegan. Now, conceivably, you could have a long line of people waiting to get on those.
Sure.
And then
I don't know how many there'll be.
Yeah, and then depending on how, if they don't have a laptop, it tells you that they're probably inexperienced and they may not be proficient at using it, which means someone is going to have to help them through the process.
And somebody's going to miss some court dates.
Yeah.
At least at first.
I think Don brought up probably will be a bigger issue.
Okay.
Is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, as we know, hey, I have my cell phone. I can make my calls on it. I can read my mail. I can hit the YouTube channel. But that's about it.
All right, Lou. Well,
and there's a lot of people like that out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm not talking. I'm not talking. No, I'm not talking. Hey, Lou. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Notice I'm quiet over here, Lou.
All of us up there. A pleasure.
All of us up there.
Once again, thank you, and I will see all of you soon. Anyway, by the end of the weekend. We're going to get together one way or another.
And don't forget, we do have a Zoom meeting coming up, too.
We have a Zoom meeting.
All right, Lou, take care. We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was our executive producer, Lou Bruno, of COVID-19 and its impact on Lake County, getting us some more information on how modern technology is working in the court system.
We were just talking about that.
You talking about it in music, yeah. In court? Obviously, people are using it at home while they're working in all of their work areas, and it's just amazing. And this, if anything, is a positive. This disease has pushed us forward technically.
Yeah, it's made us have to rethink some things and procedures, and maybe streamline some things and make it easier and better for us to communicate. So you can see those are some of the good things that are coming out of it. So, you know, we're thankful for that, and people are smart enough to realize, hey, if it's working. Why change it? The NFL, they love that draft, you know?
Right. It's been a great day, Don, and I want to thank you for tuning in with us. I want to thank Bill the Buddha Dickens, just coming in and hearing some slapping bass and hearing some beautiful bass in that one song on the record, and just inspiring all of us to have a wonderful afternoon. I encourage everyone to go out and enjoy yourself before it rains, possible thunderstorms later today. And, you know, since March 23rd, WRLR has been keeping you informed with special COVID-19 programming, showing its impact on Lake County. As we head into Phase 3 of Governor Pritzker's plan to reopen the state of Illinois, 98.3 will be returning to its live regular programming. WRLR will not forget to keep you updated on the coronavirus pandemic and where you can get help during the rest of this crisis. Your live producers will have information on Lake County events, as well as their special segments that make up the Voice of Lake County. So stay tuned to WLR, but remember, this crisis is not over. Clean your hands, cover your cough or sneeze, and contain yourself if you're ill. The 3 C's and social distancing of 6 feet or more will get us through this crazy time. And of course, we'll be there to keep you informed. After all, we are the Voice of Lake County, 98.3 FM WRLR.
And let's remind people, tomorrow we have a special guest coming in. Actor, soap opera guy.
Let's not make it a surprise. Go ahead, Don.
Mark Moses
from Desperate Housewives
is gonna call in tomorrow. So that should be fun.
All right, tell your friends, and we'll put it on Facebook. We'll put it on the web for you as well. This is Norman Don saying thank you for listening and tuning in to WRLR 98.3 FM, Round Lake Beach, Illinois.
Exile and Kiss You All Over. That brings it to the end of Supersonic 70s. Keep the requests coming in on the email chunkyjeff, chunkyjeff@gmail.com. Catch you next week for more of Supersonic 70s. Thanks very much to your company.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake, Illinois.
Welcome to Motown Memories. This is Tom Fallon. And during the next half hour, we'll feature all songs that contain the word never in the title of the song. We'll hear from the Jackson 5,